This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. Do you think you can predict the winners in the 2024 elections? Well, with Interactive Brokers Forecast Trader, you can trade your view. Simply answer yes or no. Will Harris win the presidency? Will the Democrats win control of the Senate? Will the Republicans win? If you agree with one of these, buy a yes contract. If you disagree, buy a no. It's that easy. Prices range from 2 to 99 cents. And correct predictions earn $1 at settlement. And incorrect ones settle at zero, with commission-free trading and open positions earning 4.33% APY. There's no better time to get started. The best-informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Visit ibkr.com/forecast and get started today. Member SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
McDonald's, ho! E. coli outbreak spooks investors. Starbucks global sales dropping pretty hard. Yields climbing as the Minsky moment is whispered. Our guest today, Ed Easterling of Crestmont Holdings. All this and much more on episode number 892 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Getting ready, getting set. Yes, we're about to enter into the Thunderdome of earnings. The big boys are about to show us what they got. I mean, we are about to see some real serious action in the markets as we find out if some of the big tech titans can continue on their march to massive earnings beats. Welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz and founder of Horowitz & Company. What do we do? Well, here... Well, we're talking about financial education. We're talking about investments. We're talking about making sure that you have the tools, the things that you need to be successful. What we do here in my home base in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with the team is we help you with your investments. Of course, in real life versus the podcast, things are a lot the same. They're very similar. We try to make sure that you're getting what you need to get ahead. Sometimes you could do it by yourself. Sometimes you need a little help. That's what we're here for. So I'm so glad you're here because there are a few things that we need to discuss getting into this earnings season. But more importantly, I think with what's happening with the markets right now, that ugly sell-off midweek that obviously went in a lot of directions. It was depending on which side of the investment universe you're on, whether you are on some of the more placid and more value-oriented investments or maybe more of the high yields. The high yielders and the high growth ones. I mean, there was a big differential. But the point here is a lot of it was due to what? What happened? What was the catalyst? Well, clearly the catalyst is some concern about the upcoming election. But more importantly, I think most people are looking at that as a, well, we'll wait and see. If we're going to see that on one hand, the Republicans and Trump win the White House, who's going to win Congress? And same thing, vice versa, when it comes to Harris. If Harris, in fact, takes the White House, well, who's going to be in Congress? That is going to be the determinant of, I think, where markets go and what's going to happen. The one thing that we know about both of these candidates, that they're both inflationary. The one thing we know about President Trump is that he has the power in some of the things that he's trying to do, particularly with some of the tariffs and the broad-based tariffs, to do it through executive order. So there's a one thing that we need to look at, but what is going on right now? Because that is coming up in a couple of weeks and markets have no outward view these days and no market memory. There's no muscle memory when it comes to markets. What is happening right now when it comes to the markets and where they're getting skittish? Well, I think I talked about this last week on the opening for DH Unplugged. It was all about this idea that it seems that market's getting a little bit tired, and particularly in the face of, this is the key, higher rates. Did you see what's happening with rates? I mean, they're moving up, and that's not what most expected. The plan was that the Fed was going to come in and we're going to see much lower rates moving forward. I mean, I heard a lot of talk. I mean, Cramer's like, oh, who cares about the move in the rates? But of course, that's on the heels of him being very excited that it's such a great thing for investing, right? Bullish to the till his death. The fact is that when you look at what has happened from 3.6% right before the rate cut to where we are now, what, 4.2? I think we hit 4.25% this week. That is something that's really spooking people because it's not what was expected, as again, rates were considered to be, well, at their peak, nearing 5% before the Fed came in. But why is it now all of a sudden changing when the Fed has said, well, we're going to continue on. We're going to continue with our process of lowering rates because the fact is that they really can't do so very aggressively. The numbers that we have seen come in from a growth standpoint, GDP, and all the other things that we've been talking about over the last few weeks, that is something. We're going to talk more about CPI, inflation, with our guest today, because I know that's one thing that we had written down that we want to talk about. So we'll get to that when we bring them on. But the Fed, in their wisdom, decided that this is the time to keep sticking with their story. Now, one of the things that's being whispered about, and we are starting to see mention of, you know, kind of where you see, well, what's that Google trend of that word? It's a phrase. It's starting to percolate. It's called the Minsky moment. What's a Minsky moment? Let me give you the textbook on this. It's a sudden and catastrophic collapse of asset prices after a period of growth and stability. Now, this Minsky's an American economist, Hyman Minsky, born in 1911, died in 1996. And he believed that markets are inherently unstable. And long periods of good markets eventually end in larger crises. Now, that could be the sound of just a negative Nelly. Okay, that's possible, because when we start with the idea that he believed that markets were inherently unstable, that kind of maybe disqualifies him, but not really. In his lifetime, that was the reality. This is before we had a very well-run and centrally managed economy by the Fed, trying never to have a peak-to-trough normal economic cycle. And the Minsky moment really occurs when excessive debt accumulation becomes unsustainable. Borrowers can no longer meet their debt obligations using their income, leading and getting towards a sudden decline in asset prices and eventually a financial crisis. Now, if you think about that, when we talk about the amount of debt that we have, for the first time ever, just this week it was released by the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, that the United States of America now has a GDP that's 100% of debt to GDP is 100%. And more importantly, our debt service is finally, I guess we get, is this a badge of honor we get for this? Eclipsed $1 trillion a year. We're paying more than $1 trillion of interest, which is more than 20% of our tax receipts. Think about that. More than 20% of our tax receipts are being paid in borrowed money. That's how bad it has gotten. And these two people that are coming into office, one or the other, are probably going to rack up more debt. And we go back to Minsky and why this discussion of a Minsky moment has been percolating. Again, I'm going to read this right here. It says, a Minsky moment occurs when, out of nowhere, an excessive debt accumulation becomes unsustainable, where you just can't refinance those credit cards anymore, where you can't find anybody to lend you money, and all of a sudden the entire house of cards collapses. Are we at that point right now? Remember something. When we look back to what happened during the financial crisis, the first thing that happened was the banks had to basically bail out the individuals, the borrowers that over-leveraged through mortgages. They took it on the chin. From there, the governments had to do what they can to bail people out. And from there, it was the central banks. Who bails out the central banks? Who bails out the governments? There's not much left. So here we are in a situation where we're finding ourselves back on the plane of the highest interest we've seen in months, a couple of months, and a position where we're paying more than ever. And the candidates are talking about cutting taxes on tips and firefighters and on overtime, on Social Security. Oh, my goodness. Really? There goes the U.S. rating right in the toilet. I would not put it past the S&P Moody's to say, you know what? There is no way you guys deserve the rating that you deserve with your debt to GDP, your debt service. And the fact is your receipts are just not covering. Your debt service coverage is just pathetic. So that's why, just to sum this all up and bring a nice ribbon and bow to end this discussion on this, is why this Minsky moment is starting to be heard out there a little bit louder than it was before. With that, we got to talk about CPI, got to talk about what's going on in the world, and I think no better person to do that than our next guest, so let's get it on. And our guest today is Ed Easterling. He's the founder and president of Crestmont Holdings, an Oregon-based investment management and research firm that publishes provocative research on the financial markets. You can find more information at crestmontresearch.com. Now, Ed's had over 30 years of alternative, or we call alt, investment experience, including financial markets, of course, private equity, business operations. Written books like Probable Outcomes, Secular Stock Market Insights, and Unexpected Returns, dealing with secular stock market cycles. And he's been on before, and I want to bring him back because, Ed and I have talked about a variety of different things, and one of the things that's coming to the fore, which we'll let him talk about, is an interesting potential issue that is a headwind that maybe people aren't considering. So let's just stop there and say hello to Ed. How are you, buddy?
Doing great, Andrew. It's great to be with you again today.
So I know there's a lot of things. We talked a bit about this, but there's a lot of things that are going on that obviously in the markets, there's always a lot of things going on. A lot of things that are looked upon as important. Some things that are important that are ignored. Some things that are ignored that are important. But one of the things that we've talked about, you and I, is this idea of a headwind. And this is something that may be potentially taking people off guard, but yet who knows what and how markets react? Because I think you've once told me something about you're not a weather forecaster. You're not a market forecaster. You're a market climatologist, right?
That's right.
So with that in mind, you're looking at what's happening now. You know, you're Jim Cantore in the storm, telling us what's going on at that moment and kind of outward, right? So what are the headwinds that we're going to be dealing with through the end of this year?
Andrew, there's an interesting circumstance happening with the inflation rate, especially the reported inflation rate, consumer price index. And I think the reason that fits into the longer term secular market understanding is right now the market's moving on up. Its valuations are high. With valuations high, the market's more vulnerable. And with this upcoming circumstance, I decided to spend a little bit of time, a little bit of ink, writing about the next quarter or two in the consumer price index.
So what's the issue?
The issue is that because of circumstances a year ago, because of the way that CPI is reported,
and calculated year over year versus month of a month, and then all that, yeah.
Exactly. That we're set for the fourth quarter to potentially get back to or above 3%. And the last report, as you know, was 2.4%. And people were cheering that we were finally below 2.5 on our way to 2. And then the first quarter is going to see a plunge in the inflation rate. So the market might be looking out 6 or 9 months past all of this, but the investors are going to have to live through it month by month, week by week, article by article for the next 6 months.
So there's a couple of things I want to talk about. So there's one, the statistical calculation that's related to the CPI that may have an aberration both on the next 3 months and then the following 3 months, right? Averaging out to be still the same as where we are now, right? Is that a reasonable thing to say?
And even below, even landing the plane at the target of below 2%.
Okay.
So, or at or below 2%. The issue is that the report that we see in the headlines is the year over year inflation rate. So the next report that comes out will be October's inflation compared to where it was a year ago. And inside of that, there are the monthly inflation reports. Those are kind of buried down in the footnotes. And that's the inflation rate month over month. The big picture is for the listeners, the fourth quarter of last year, 2023, had deflation. Every month was negative on inflation. And the year over year rate is effectively the cumulative effect of all the months. So as we get each report in the next quarter, each month that shows a positive inflation is going to be dropping off a negative number and adding a positive number. Or if it just adds, if it has a negative number, if the number is less negative than it was a year ago, inflation's still going up. So the effect of that is that by year end, we could see a number over at or over 3% on the inflation rate.
So markets may freak out, is what you're saying.
I'm saying that people are so focused right now, they've been pushing the Fed to cut rates. The Fed's been, he had a big jump before it at a half, at 50 basis points. They're going to come again here in the next few weeks, likely cutting again, but although the markets or the articles are getting a bit cautious about that. But yes, I would expect that we do see potentially more cuts by the Fed or certainly more positive reports coming out of their meetings in the face of inflation going up. And I think that could be confusing. Matter of fact, it could start to sound like transitory 2.0.
I was thinking just that, the word that they're going to talk about how rates are coming down, but it's just transitory. Don't worry about it. Yeah, I can see that.
And so I think the message is that we're going to see articles about potentially. And again, what we have is one half the equation. So this equation is about what inflation was doing a year ago, which is dropping out of the average, and what's going to happen now. We know what's dropping out of the average is a big negative number for the next 3 months. So any number, whether it's zero, positive, or even just less negative than it was a year ago, is going to cause the inflation rate to start moving up. And I think that's what could be concerning, is moving up. If, though, inflation is, let's say, relatively low or near zero, but we still see a number that's close to 3%, I think that's going to make people nervous if we see a three handle again on the CPI.
Interesting. But what about, aside from the statistical calculation of where inflation is compared to where it was, that's what we're talking about here, right? Forget right. that for a second. Well, just keep that in the background for a second. It does also appear to me that there is some potential for inflation starting to inch up on its natural own anyway, due to the fact of a rate cut, we're looking at a GDP, which is pretty strong. We're seeing that the rest of the world is cutting rates as well. We're seeing the unemployment get better. I think, what do you think about that concept, that on top of the fact that we're seeing the statistical calculations, that in fact, truly inflation could be ticking up a little bit?
I have two trolls that sit on each shoulder, one troll on each shoulder, and one of them is the optimist, the other is the realist. The optimist is saying, let's hope that the Fed does have inflation under control. Let's hope that they are bringing the true underlying inflation down. And with that, we're still going to see this bump up in the reported rate temporarily. But let's go to the realist side. What if there are some underlying signs here that just for the next few months, there was a little bit of a tick up in inflation, a true underlying inflation? And if that's the case, then it just accentuates what we just discussed. We could be well into the threes rather than just over three.
Right. And then there's a whole different discussion we'll be having, because there will be the, oh my gosh, not only did we have no hard landing, potentially, we had no soft landing, we had no landing, we're like at 42,000 feet up, and what's below us?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And maybe just if I could offer one comment here, mm-hmm. and that's just, we've been talking about the inflation rate in kind of very quantitative terms. I think the key is to just appreciate what this means by last year was deflationary. The Bureau of Labor Statistics goes out and they look at a basket of goods. And they say that basket of goods cost a certain amount. And what we're talking about here is that basket of goods today costs more than it did a year ago. And that's the rate they calculate. Mm-hmm. What's affecting us here is that in the fourth quarter of last year, that basket of goods every month, October, November, December, went down in value. It went down in value in the fourth quarter of last year. Now, the reported annual rate was going down a little bit. It then bumped up in the spring. But the key point is that because the basket of goods on in the denominator, the baseline for this year-over-year rate is going down in value, even if we didn't change the current cost of the basket, it would look like it was going up because it's going up relative to a basket that was dropping last year. So that's what's happening. It's not some quirky phenomenon of some statistical measure that, you know, T-square or whatever the statistics statisticians want to talk about. This is just fundamentally that we did see this kind of fourth quarter of last year, see prices declining, but not showing up as much because it was blended into a 12-month average. But now, one last thing to note, the fourth quarter does have a bias to the downside. It's been, it's had lower inflation numbers than most of the year for the last 5 years.
Why is that? Is there a reason for that? Is it some like
don't know. I haven't been able to determine that. Hmm. And what I can tell you is that if we look at the number of months in the fourth quarter, there have been in the last 5 years, if you look at all the fourth quarter months, about half of them were negative.
Is it I was going to say sales that go on during holidays, but that's usually after the fact.
Well, exact. And so, but the first two quarters are sort of 10 to 20%. So it's not, it's a bias, maybe a little more than a slight bias, but it is something to be aware of. At the same time, last year was the only year that had a cumulative negative in the fourth quarter. So that's why it was kind of an outlier in the last 5 years. I think as we look at this year, even if we bias down versus what we've seen most of this year, we still are likely to see more inflation than we had in the fourth quarter of last year, which causes the year-over-year rate to go up a little bit. Mm. Now, by the way, I don't want to lose sight. I want to make sure that the listeners are not hearing this as a really draconian negative thing. This same factor, this same force flips, and it flips on steroids in the first quarter. We had so much inflation in the first quarter of 2024 that it's almost, I won't even say it's almost impossible. It's very, very unlikely.
And if we do, by the way, just a point of reference, if we do see inflation, that's a bigger problem. That is where the problem comes in.
Boy, the hurdle for the first quarter, the month on month, the average annualized inflation rate month on month for the first quarter of this year, of 2024, was over 7% annualized each month. So there's such a high hurdle. It's almost, it's very unlikely that we're not going to see.
You stopped yourself twice on the word impossible.
Yes. And it's different this time, right? Different this time. So that we're likely to not only catch back up all of the rise that may happen in the fourth quarter, we're likely to be back by April of next year, below 2% on the inflation rate. So I think the key is but by the way, the reason that this is important for investors is to recognize as they're going into this, as they make decisions in their holdings and their hedges, et cetera, that what we have coming into this fourth quarter is this potential uplift that's very likely to be very temporary and that it's going to go back against that. So it could have implications for bond prices. It could have implications for, I worry more about what the press does. I mean, the press may have a heyday with this surge in inflation and whether the Fed has made a mistake or not.
Well,
and it could put a lot of pressure on the Fed.
And you're right in the middle of post election, which then, depending on which character gets in, will depend on how they address this issue. You know, whether they're going to slam the Fed or try to compensate it's something else or whatever it may be. So let me back up a little bit and wind back to the idea of the 50 basis point cut that happened. You know, and your thoughts on, was that appropriate considering your thoughts, you know, what you think, was it appropriate considering all the things we know about the economic condition at this current time?
You know, that's a good question. The Fed has a lot more insight into what,
that's why I asked what your opinion was,
what they're seeing. You know, my opinion was, it's easy to offer an opinion here because I would have made that decision in the context of what's likely to happen. The Fed needs to maintain credibility above all. And I think the 50 basis point cut was not conservative. The open question is whether they should cut or not, right? I think to have cut maybe 25 basis points and they've been a little bit more cautious in their messaging about the upcoming, that inflation's largely on track. But we may see these bumps along the way, but that we are confident that the longer term trend is getting inflation back to our target range. Something like that with 25 basis points of caution, I think they would have been better prepared to not disrupt the market here in the next 3 months.
Okay. Let's take a quick break, and I want to come back. I want to ask you a question. I want to talk about the markets, and I want to talk about valuations. I want to talk about not only valuations, but some areas that, considering this discussion we're having right now, related to inflation, how that may play out end of year into beginning of 2025, and some of your thoughts on sectors that may be benefiting or potentially problematic moving forward. So hang on a second. Now let's talk about Interactive Brokers again. I want to specifically talk about Portfolio Analyst. And this is powered by Interactive Brokers, and it helps sophisticated investors understand the health of their complete financial portfolio. Portfolio Analyst is free, and it's easy to use personal finance software that creates a consolidated view of banking, of brokerage, and even credit card accounts. You can compare your consolidated portfolio against more than 200 benchmarks or create customized benchmarks for analyzing performance. Calculate time and money-weighted rates of returns and use Portfolio Analyst for forecasting. Sign up for free at PortfolioAnalyst.com. Before we get back to Ed, I also want to mention, if you don't do so already, make sure to follow us on Twitter. At Andrew Horowitz is the way to get the first release of when the podcasts come out, other news, talk to us, things like that. Of course, you can go over to The Disciplined Investor as well and make sure you subscribe on any of your favorite podcast apps, whether it's Spotify or iHeartRadio or Apple or Amazon or take your pick, whatever it is. And make sure to get on the mailing list as well. Just all you have to do is go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Pop-up comes up. Just put your name and your email, and you'll get daily updates on what's going on, usually every week or so, on what's going on with the Disciplined Investor podcast. Thanks so much for that. And we're back with Ed Easterling from Crestmont Holdings, all the way from Oregon, where it's probably getting dark much more quickly right now, isn't it?
Than we are. We're moving in the time of the year where we have shorter days.
What time does it get dark by you?
Well, let's see. Right now, it's not it's not bad. You know, right now we're still. It will ultimately, when we get into the middle of the winter, will be dark around 4:30 or so, and 5 o'clock.
I always just find that very funny. What time is it? Wait. What time does the sun come up?
And then that time of the year, the sun doesn't come up until 8 o'clock or so.
Yeah. That's rough.
But part of it is we're also on the west side of Oregon, so people often think about us as being kind of in the cold north. But we're so close to the west coast that we actually stay fairly temperate. We don't have many days below freezing, and not a lot of days above 90.
Oh, that's good. That's nice.
Over here, yeah.
So when we left off, we were talking about obviously the potential for the CPI situation that's coming up. But also, moreover, I asked the question of, how do we play this, right? What sectors may be doing well? What areas could be shocked if this happens? What's the outlook? Do you have anything in particular that, we talked about bonds for a second there, but setting up into this, and I'm not asking for absolutes, but setting up into the end of the year with the potential for a CPI surprise, which, see how that goes with a CPI drop in the beginning of the year. Where's the setup? Where's the benefits? Are we still the same game as we are now?
Well, I think we're in the same game in the sense that right now, here's the challenge. The challenge is markets over the long term are driven by value, over the short term, driven by psychology and other factors. Right now, in the past year, two or three, we've seen a tremendous amount of momentum in the market and some signs that things have gotten a little frothy. We've got some of the wisest sages, investors that are being particularly cautious right now. I think it's warranted. At the same time, momentum is up. Part of it is that the market over the long term, valuations are driven by the inflation rate. As inflation gets low and stable, where it looks like we're ultimately headed, that justifies a higher valuation. And if inflation were to get out of control, then that's, as we've seen historically, that's something that raises bond yields and it lowers stock prices.
But meanwhile, bond yields went from 3.6% when the Fed cut rates a few weeks ago to about 4% round number on the 10-year, and the markets don't care. The markets have hitting all-time new highs, right, generally speaking. And we saw, like, earnings come out. That's your evaluation input. That is the evaluation input, is earnings on the stocks, which is driven by a lot of things. It's higher revenue. Of course, massive stock buybacks don't hurt. But at a consumer that generally has been okay, more so an investor that has sloughed off any bad news. Look at my favorite thing of this last quarter has been what happened with, like, Home Depot and Lowe's as an example. They both came out with, okay earnings, but really guided down and said, hey, you know what? The consumer's being cautious. There was like 2 days that the stocks moved down slightly and then they went back right up. So investors are giving a benefit of the doubt, aren't they?
They are. Well, let's see. Stock investors are. I think let's put this in perspective. You raised a really good point that I think is worth touching on. And that's a disconnect between the bond market and the stock market. Yep. The bond market tends to be a little quicker at the trigger to see things. What we saw was the Fed cut 50 basis points and the 10-year went up. The Fed controls short rates. The Fed has its iron hand and iron fist on short rates. This is the same thing that got Greenspan back into the Greenspan conundrum, which was as the Fed started cutting rates, longer rates went up. Long-term rates are driven by the inflation rate. If in markets expect that the inflation rate is going to go up, then we see bond yields react to that and they go up. So what the bond market said was when the Fed cut 50, they went too fast. They said, you know what, that's pretty aggressive. We think that may be a risk of inflation. It's not predicting inflation. It's saying a risk of inflation. And so it went up 40 basis points. Stock market, the opposite. Stock market just said, let's ignore that. Let's just keep going.
Yep. Game's still going. Keep going.
So there's a disconnect there. You have one market saying we are concerned of an inflation risk. We have another market saying, nope, not at all.
And what's interesting is that a lot of people always say that not only is the bond market is quick, right? But they're also the smarter of the two. That's what they say. That's what they say, whoever they are, by the way.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, we've seen things like other things that are pretty interesting. Like you would expect that things like interest sensitive sectors and positions would do well, right? In a decreasing interest rate environment, which we had throughout much of 2024 and then with a little, recent move up. But nonetheless, the number one position was, I think, is utilities at this point, give or take. Real estate last quarter, third quarter, at a 17%, reached up 17% on average for the sector in the third quarter of 2024, just last quarter. Are we going to see that kind of situation? I mean, utilities are fascinating to me because no one wants to own those. Let's be honest, right? I mean, I'm on the golf course. Man, I got FP&L, I got Southern Company. I love it. You don't hear that kind of stuff, right? Man, my company is really pumping out some electricity. That doesn't happen. But the truth is, when you look at, for example, what's going on and what the catalyst is, the idea that back to AI and data warehouses and all the need for power generation and consumption due to the extraordinarily high level of, machine sucking all the power up, that utilities are going to be a benefactor for many years because they're the ones supplying the power. So is that something that continues, do you think? Have you looked into this? I don't know. Maybe you haven't.
I think one reason the utilities may not be quite in favor now, despite the fact that they often have pretty good yields. And this is a marketplace that sometimes is good for defensive stocks. I think there's a lot of uncertainty in the regulatory environment and the future policy environment.
But then we have the nuclear coming out too. There's been a lot of announcements over nuclear last number of days. I mean, real estate, interesting. It seems like how about the fact that the inevitable commercial real estate bombshell implosion never happened? Once again, a predictive catastrophe doesn't happen because massive amounts of money was thrown at it, right?
Right.
So is that our destiny?
Well, that shows one. I mean, what you're highlighting there, and again, I tend to be the kind of climatologist, and from an investment management standpoint, much more focused on investment philosophy, diversifying risk. And what you're bringing out is, in an environment like this, especially, a lot of things that might otherwise seem like they're predictable are very unpredictable. And so this is a great environment to be able to diversify risk in addition to diversifying assets.
So how do you diversify? I mean, you talked about, when I introduced you, I talked about, you know, the idea of alternatives and all. Because I've talked about this many times, and I try to ask people who are familiar with this area for what their definition of alternatives, because everybody has a little bit of a different definition. I know what mine is. What are you, when you talk about alternative investments, what kind of things are out there for people?
You know, I think the first place to start is to define what is generally meant by alternative. So let's think about what are we alternative to? We're alternative to traditional.
Yeah. Okay.
Traditional, right. Traditional is bonds and stocks and a little cash or something else. And in bonds and stocks, we're traditionally following modern portfolio theory, and we're diversifying away the individual securities and basically getting the stock market exposure. We're getting the bond market exposure. In the case of alternatives, what we're trying to do, and by the way, stocks and bonds over time are highly correlated. When inflation goes up, it hurts stocks and it hurts bonds. Remember back to the late 70s, stocks and bonds got decimated.
Look at 2022.
Remember the early 80s.
2022.
Remember the early 80s. Early 80s, as inflation started coming down, bonds did great, stocks did great. So you don't get investment portfolio diversification with stocks and bonds. You get sector diversification, the sector of bonds versus stocks, or the place in the security categories. But if you alternatives instead say, let's diversify the risks, diversify risks into things that are less affected by inflation, or investments that produce an income that are less subject to having their cash flows directly affected by inflation. So I think there are lots of different types of investments out there that would be considered alternatives, whether it's real estate, commodities, et cetera. But metals, I'm not advocating any of those. I'm just saying that alternatives really just means an alternative to passively investing in the stock market on a diversified basis, and the same thing buy and hold, and the same thing in the bond market.
Right, because I mean, the worst thing could happen, I mean, I always say 2022, even if you were 100% right on all your recommendations, you were 100% wrong. There was nothing to do that could work out and work out well. You could have been in the short-term bonds and really hardcore, low duration. They still got hurt. You know, you could have been in, what was the only thing that worked? Was energy the only thing that worked that year? There was basically nothing that worked. I mean, nothing across the entire spectrum of asset class. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. And I think a lot of things happened that year. A lot of things with psychology that happened. You know, we had a lot of uncertainty where inflation was going. I think that was a convergence storm. A lot of different factors affected that year.
So with regard to 2025, and continuing on this conversation about, you know, what potentially could happen. And obviously, I think we both agree from your conversation and what we had discussed in the beginning here that the CPI situation is concerning if it is going to become a surprise. But the totality of the circumstance shouldn't be a big deal. I mean, I think that's what we are saying, right? So,
I think if you could go to sleep right now and just wake up next summer, then sure, you'd wake up to relatively low controlled inflation, and it's uncertain where the market would have gone, but at least you wouldn't have had to go through the ride.
Yeah, exactly. So, 2025, do we still have this AI trade that is just out of control? You know, the last 2 years, if we put those 2 years together, it's been quite the run. On growth orientation. You talk about you like to look at valuations. And when we look at valuation, small cap versus large, value versus growth, I mean, there's a little bit of a interesting, it's right in your face. It smacks you right in the face with how long the outperformance has been of large cap growth to, let's just go to the opposite end of the spectrum, small cap value. With an interest rate that is declining that should, in fact, benefit the smaller companies out there, and particularly the value companies, is that going to maybe start turning?
You know, let's see. I think good question. Don't know. Again, I think that's much more of a question for a market weather forecaster than a climatologist.
Okay.
I can suggest that as a climate, from a climatological standpoint for the market, if we have relatively low inflation, we should have relatively higher valuations overall. In terms of individual sectors, I will just say there's a kind of part of me that just kind of gets a little contrarian on the latest fad. And having had quite a few decades in the market and watching even history before that, studying stock market history going back the past century, we hit these periods where, whether it's a dot-com or an AI or otherwise, that tends to be the fad. And I think AI will definitely, I'm very intrigued with it, will definitely leave its impact on productivity. It will help us to maintain productivity. But I don't know that it's going to be revolutionary.
Interesting. Where can people get more information? Well, we talked about CrestmontResearch.com. Anything else that people can find that you want to tell them? Do you want to entice them with?
Well, let's see. What I would suggest is that we had our conversation today about the CPI phenomenon coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I did write an article about that, and for your guest, I did put a link on the very homepage of Crestmont Research so that they don't have to dig and try to find it.
Okay.
So if anybody's interested, they'll go to the homepage right near the top. They'll see CPI report. There's an important chart. And as you know, Crestmont's known for its colorful charts. It's an important table that's in that article that would really emphasize a lot of the concepts we talked about and put into perspective what they can expect. So if that's helpful, that's something your audience can and your followers can find at Crestmont Research.
I like colorful charts. I always say this: if you can't get them with the data, get them with the colors. Seriously.
Well,
because some people I mean that seriously, because some people just cannot. You know, you could send a CPI table right in front of them that compares all this stuff, and they're looking at it going, what is that? You know what? If you have a colorful chart or a colorful table or something that gives a heat map of something, you know, they can maybe see it a little bit differently.
I think, and you hit on it right there. I think that, you know, color is not there just for show.
Yeah.
It's there because it helps to discern. And if there are a few, and there are in the article, a couple of comments about it, it's easier to talk about red numbers and green numbers than it is to be looking at the monochrome table of numbers.
Yeah.
And try to figure out what we're referring to. So right. I think that's, if it's helpful, you'll find that link at CrestmontResearch.com on the homepage.
And we'll have all the links on episode number 8. Was it 892? Doing this a long time. On 892 of The Disciplined Investor on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Thank you so much, Ed. I hope that your hibernation time, which is coming very shortly with the darkest in Oregon, goes well. And we'll talk real soon.
You got it. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks.
All the best.
And once again, that's a wrap of a great episode. 892 episodes. Been doing this for 17 years now. Loving every minute of it. Love talking to people. You know, one of the things we're going to do, though, starting about the first, second, third week of January, so I'm kind of reaching out there because we're booked through the end of the year with great guests. We have great authors. We have great economists. We have some great people coming on each and every week through the end of the year. But starting the beginning of the year, we're going to go back to some of the ways to make you successful by going through the basics. I like to do that towards the beginning of the year, give you some real good tips and tools and understanding of some of the things that we do on a regular basis, utilizing option strategies and hedging, looking at all the different investment types and vehicles that you can use and why you want to use some and maybe why you want to stay away from others. So make sure to be here. I'm kind of pushing this way out here, but in January, the best way to do that is simply to subscribe somehow, somewhere to get automatic downloads right to your phone, right to your computer, and have it ready to go at all times. Thank you so much for joining me this week. Thank you so much for being there. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.